So this week's parasha is Parashas Ba'aleischa, and the pasuk says, "Vayhi anashim asher hayu tameim lenefesh adam." There were people that were tamei lenefesh adam. This is the parasha of Pesach Sheni. There were some men that were defiled by a nefesh adam, by some tumas meis. It's a machlegus in the Gemara about who exactly we're talking about. Some say that these were cousins of Moshe Rabbeinu that were, or relatives of Moshe Rabbeinu, who went in to get Nadav and Avihu when they were killed in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan. Others say that it was people that were carrying Aronei Shel Yosef, the coffin of Yosef. Others say that these were people that were Tamei Meis. But they were not able to bring the Karban Pesach. This is talking about Erev Pesach. This is the second Pesach in history. The only time that Klal Yisrael as a whole kept Pesach after Pesach Mitzrayim in the Midbar, only 1 year. And so this was Erev Pesach, when everybody was busy shechting or making preparations to shech their Karban Pesach. These men, they felt that they wanted to also, but they weren't able to because they were still Tamei. So what happened was they came before Moshe and Aaron. Vayikru lufnei Moshe lufnei Aaron. They came in the presence of Moshe and Aaron. Bayayim hahu. So again, let's just go over this pasuk, at least the end of the pasuk again, and you'll ask the question that I asked to myself. V'lo yachlu laseis ha-pesach bayayim hahu. They were not able to make this Karban Pesach bayayim hahu on that day. And then it says in the same pasuk, "Vayikru lufnei Moshe lufnei Aaron bayayim hahu." So the question is obvious: why is the pasuk saying twice bayayim hahu? It says already that they came on that day, that they were not able to make the Karban Pesach bayayim hahu. And then it says again, "Vayikru lufnei Moshe lufnei Aaron bayayim hahu on that day." So what's the redundancy in the pasuk? So I was thinking that Rashi says, Lufnei Moshe Lufnei Aaron. Rashi says, what were they doing? Where were Moshe and Aaron when they came, when these men came to them? So Rashi says, Kishashneim Yeshvim Beis HaMedrash Ba'u V'Shalom. Moshe and Aaron were in the Beis Medrash learning, and that was the point in time that these people that were Tamei Lanefesh came to ask Moshe and Aaron, we want to also bring a Karban Pesach. Lama Nigar, why are we being denied the opportunity that everyone else is to bring the Karban Pesach? So to that, and then Moshe Rabbeinu, of course, went to Hashem, and Hashem answered them and said, you can bring a Karban, not this month, but in a month's time, you'll bring a Pesach Sheni. But it's fascinating that Moshe and Aaron, when this question was posed to them, were found in the Beis Medrash learning. Why is that so fascinating? That's, you'd expect that, right? They're, what else are they doing, Moshe and Aaron? But if you think about it, this day was Erev Pesach. How many Kehanim were there in, to do all of the Aveda for all of the Karbanos? There were 600,000 men, probably an equal number of women. 600,000 men were from 20 to 60, right? To 50, to 60, 20 to 60. So, right, and then there were older people, there were younger people. There must have been millions of people that needed to bring their Karban Pesach on this day. And whose job was it to shecht and to do the all of the avaida of all these karbanes? It was Aaron and his two sons. Moshe Rabbeinu, no doubt, was very busy that day also. Yes, they paskin all these shilos about, it happened to have been Erev Pesach Shechalias B'Shabbos. You know, there's so many, we had that this year. That Pesach Sheni took place in, Chazal tell us, it happens to be that, because we know this because the Miluim, the Rosh Chodesh Nisan that day was a Sunday. Chazal say that very clearly. It was Yom Rishon and Lamaisa Bereishis, so it was a Sunday. So if you do the calculations, Erev Pesach that year was a Shabbos. So even when Erev Pesach falls on Shabbos, you could bring the Karban Pesach, you can shech the Karban Pesach on Shabbos itself. B'mayadeh we darshan afilu b'shabbos. So there was tremendous amounts of shilos that were no doubt being asked, how to destroy the chametz appropriately, how to... Moshe Rabbeinu was the paisek of Klal Yisrael. So this was a day that was arguably the busiest day for Moshe and Aaron of all, because it was Erev Pesach, they had to shecht, and they had to paskin, and they had to deal with all of Klal Yisrael's many issues, and had to do the Karim Pesach properly in the Mishkan with the different groups, and the whole Meseches Pesachim was coming l'maisa that day. A short day. How many hours was it that day? From Chatzos and on, they have to start being busy, bring the shecht and Karim Pesach. In the mornings, they were probably davening, they were doing their avodah, and yet the pasuk says amazingly that vayikru lufnei Moshe lufnei Aaron, they came before Moshe and Aaron. Rashi says that they were in the Beis Medrash learning. To me, that's like a mind blowing thing. That on that day, of all days, that you'd think that Moshe and Aaron could take a break from their chavrusashaft and say, listen, okay, we'll reconvene, you know, tomorrow. We'll have plenty of time on Yantif or whatever. But right now, we're busy. We're busy. We don't have the ability to learn right now. We have karbanas. We have things to do. Vayikr lufnei Moshe lufnei Aaron. When? Vayim hahu. Even on that day, on that most busy day in Klal Yisrael's history, maybe, Moshe and Aaron found time to be kavei itim and to learn. It's an amazing thing. It's a beautiful lesson, I think, that the parish is telling us. Yes, b'yayim ahu, they weren't able to make the Karm Pesach, but focus on Moshe and Aaron. B'yikru l'fnei Moshe l'fnei Aaron, b'yayim ahu, on that day. And that's a tremendous Musar Haskel for us all. Because we're very busy. We have busy lives. Baruch Hashem, that's a good thing. We're busy with school. We're busy with internships. We're busy with family. We're busy with a lot of things. And that's all very good. But as busy as we are, we're not as busy as Moshe and Aaron by Yemahu. And if Moshe and Aaron were able to carve out, I don't know how long it was. It might have been 10 minutes. It might have been 3 hours. Whatever it was, they were able to carve out time by Yemahu on that day, on that busy day. They found time to be kavei itim. Then that's a machaya for everybody. Moshe and Aaron also, by the way, they didn't have to learn so much. I mean, they knew everything. It's like Reb Chaim Kanievsky. I think the most inspirational thing about Reb Chaim Kanievsky is that he learns so much even though he knows everything. It's one thing if I learn a lot. I don't know anything, so I'm learning so I to know a little bit. But if, let's say, I would know everything and I'd still be able to do every day, you know, seven blat Bavli, seven blat Yerushalmi, Sifra, Sifri, Taisefta, Zayars, whatever, every day, even though he knows it cold. But yet he's kaveya itim, not itim, most of his day, if not all of his day, is learning, besides for the time that he davens and spends, you know, dealing with people's issues. That's very inspirational. Moshe and Aaron were the Mekablei Torah, they were Gedolei Yisrael, they knew Torah a billion times better, I imagine, than Reb Chaim Kanievsky, and yet they were also kaveya itim. They said, we have to be kaveya itim, we have to make a time to learn, and we're going to learn. This is our Seder. Aye, but Klal Yisrael and Avodah and Karban Pesach and people coming in and out, Shilas, that's very nice, but we still have to be able to sit and learn every single day. Vayayimo. And of course, that's a very big lesson for us going into the summer, when, although we have maybe more time, but we feel, you know, maybe we need to chill more, and that's fine also. It's good to chill. But if we want to have a meaningful summer and we want to come back in Elul, you know, still primed and ready to learn, then we have to make sure every day to be kavei itim. We have to make sure to find time, and regardless of what we're doing, and if we're working or we're in school or we're learning, whatever, we have to make sure that we have a kvias every single day. And how long that is depending on you and your schedule and your abilities. But everybody must be kavei itim. That's something that I think we can definitely learn from this parasha. I had one other thought on this pasuk of what the Bayemahu is, and I'd like to share that with you as well. who are these people that we're talking about? So they were great people, no doubt. In fact, Rashi says that this parsha was really supposed to be said by Har Sinai. Pesach Sheni should have been given to us with the rest of the Torah. Why wasn't it? Because Megalgalin Tzchus Ayidei Zakai, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu arranges that Tzchusim should come via people that are worthy people. So these people were obviously worthy. If they weren't, but at the same time, and this is a lot of the Svarim HaKadoshim use their situation as a metaphor for people that are Temeim and Bederech Rechaika. And that's what they were. They were Temeim, or they were maybe Bederech Rechaika, but what it means homiletically is that there are people that are sometimes Tamei. They're not on top of their game. They're not acting in a way that's always Betara, Bekdusha. They're Bederech Rechaika. Maybe they're a little far from God. They're a little bit off the Derech. They're a lot off the Derech. And look at what they're able to do. They're able to go into a Beis Medrash, and they're able to walk right over to Moshe and Aaron, who I think if we were in a 20-mile radius of Moshe and Aaron, we would probably burn up from their Kedusha. Like, imagine what they were. It's hard to even imagine. But they were able to go in, people that were Temeim and Bederech Rechaika, they were able to go into a Beis Medrash, and Moshe and Aaron were sitting and learning there, and they were able to go and approach them and ask them the Shaila. That's also, I think, a very, very incredible thing. There's a story that's told about the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim had a Talmud who was a big tzaddik. His name was Rabbi Elio Dushnitzer. And he advised this Talmud that when he goes to Eretz Yisrael, he should look up the Leshem. He should go and go to the Leshem and schmooze with him and talk to him in learning and just have anything you can to do with him. Who was the Leshem? The Leshem was Reb Shlomo Elyashiv. He was Reb Elyashiv's grandfather, paternal grandfather. Reb Elyashiv grew up on his lap. He basically learned a lot from him as a child. And in fact, I think the Leshem writes in one of his many Svarim on Kabbalah that he speaks about his grandson who was a teenager then, and how what a gadol he is, and how I think he's so proficient in Chachmas Anistar. We know Rabbi Yashiv for being the Pesach Adar, so we think, okay, he's in the, we categorize him in the halacha group. We don't look at him as a mekobol. But Rabbi Yashiv was a great mekobol. He got personal messiah from his grandfather, the Leshem, who was arguably the greatest Kabbalist of his time. And his svarim is called Leshem Shvai V'Achlama, which are the names of the stones on the Cheshen, on the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol. And he's just known as the Baal HaLeshem, the author of the Leshem. And he was at Tzadik Yisrael Island by his Levaya, like the people, they buried him on Har HaZeisim, and supposedly, from eyewitnesses, like the heavens opened when he was being transported to his final resting place, and there were rainbows, and things were happening, and Shemayim was like a very evident event that this was a very holy person. So the Chafetz Chaim said that I want you to go and visit the Leshem and spend time with him. He says, because in this world you're able to do that. But in Olam Haba, after we all die, he says, the Lashon of the Chafetz Chaim was, Ba'olam ha'elyain, yeh mekaymai beheichalais ha'elyainim, gavaya me'al gavaya. He's going to be so elevated, he's going to be in the upper spheres of heaven, so high, the Nia Rechaikim Imen. The Chafetz Chaim was including himself also in this. Can you imagine? The Chafetz Chaim, you think he gets the skybox in Shemayim, right? So the Chafetz Chaim is saying about the Leshem that the Leshem is going to be so high that we're not going to be able to see him in the next world. He's going to be so distant from us. And I was thinking that, it's amazing that this parsha is saying that there were people that were Bederech Rechaika, there were people that were Tamei LaNefesh, They were not, obviously, maybe in the highest ranks, at least homiletically. They were not, who knows what, in terms of, there was definitely Zakayim, but, you know, more than that, we don't know. But in terms of the ability that they had to go and enter a Beis Medrash and communicate with Moshe, communicate with Aaron, just seeing their faces, to be able to be in their mechitzas, that itself, I think, is an amazing concept if you think about it. And that also, Vayikru l'fnei Moshe l'fnei Aaron, Vayayim Ahu. It's only Vayayim Ahu, it's on that day, meaning in this lifetime, that's the only opportunity that we have to have such close kesher with Gedolei Yisrael, with great people. Because Lasid Lavei, it's not going to be so simple. Lasid Lavei, you know, we don't know. Hopefully, if we do what we should in life, then we will be able to be on a very high level. But you can't assume it. You can't assume it. So if in this world we're able to walk over to a gadol and shmooze them, get a bracha from them, talk to them, that's an amazing opportunity. It's only Bayei Mahu. That opportunity is an opportunity that you only have. It's like one of the perks of Eilam Hazeh. It's one of the things that we get to do in this world and that we're not assured about in the next world. You know, to be able to, you know, I was able to go to Shir by Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. I mean, it's crazy. It doesn't make sense that I was able to sit in the same room with them, to see him. It's only Bayei Mahu. It's only Bayei Mahu that a person can do that. You know, to go over to Moshe Feinstein, you know, and shake his hand, and it's not a normal thing. It's Bayei Mahu, you're able to do these things. That's another thing that we learn from these two words in the pasuk. So we learn two lessons from this pasuk already. Number one is that you have to be able to be kaveya itim. That even on Bayei Mahu, on that busiest day of Klal Yisrael, when they had to be makriv hundreds and thousands of karbanis within a short amount of time, it took them probably seconds for every karb. Karbanis are not easy to shech. You got to get the animal in the right position. You got to, you know, get the knife sharpened. You got to get the kabbalah ready and the dam and spritz it and do whatever you have to do. It was an assembly line with three people on it when the Mishnayos and Psachim speak about the assembly lines that took place by, you know, in the Beis Hamikdash by Karmaz. There we already had thousands of kaihanim that were able to pass the buckets back and forth. Here you had three kaihanim. You had Aaron, and you have Elazar and Isamar. That was it. They had to do hundreds and thousands of karbanis by MOO. Moshe had to paskin shilas and whatever else he was doing in the Beis Hamikdash, and whatever else he was doing in terms of... And they were able to be kaveh itim on that day. Bayei Mahu, on that busy day, Moshe and Aaron were found in the Beis Medrash learning. Lesson number one. We must be kaveh itim every day, regardless of how busy we are during the year and through the summer. Lesson number two is that in this world, we have to chaperein, and when we have an opportunity to see Anoshim Gedolim and to learn from them and to see them daven, to see them learning and to be in their mechitzas, we have to chaperein because it's a limited opportunity. It's an opportunity that happens by Yei Mahu on that day, meaning in this world, we get that opportunity to walk into a Beis Medrash, to interact with a Moshe and with an Aaron. But it's only in this world. In the next world, I don't know if we'll be able to see Reb Chaim Kanievsky in the next world. We're not going to be able to see Reb Shmuel Kamenetsky. We're not going to be able to see certain tzaddikim. They're going to be in Ilamis that are, you know, I may have asked him, but they're going to be in Ilamis that are way above us. So here in this world, when we see it, when we have an opportunity to spend time or to listen or to watch, it's a tremendous opportunity. There's one other thing that I wanted to share with you this morning. And that is that Moshe Rabbeinu, when after they came and they presented their case to him and they said, Lama Nigara, they were full of gaguim, they were full of desire to bring this Karban Pesach, and they weren't allowed to bring it this year, but this month. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a special provision for them that, okay, you're going to have a Pesach Sheni, in on Yud Dalet Iyar, you'll be able to bring a Karban Pesach, a different halachas. You don't have to have chametz rid of your, you know, in your house. You can have chametz, can't eat it with chametz, but you can have chametz around. It's a different, not all the halachas are identical, but it gave them a second chance to mekayim the mitzvah that they wanted to do so badly. And before Moshe Rabbeinu gave them an answer, he said to them, "Imdu ve'eshma'a ma'yitzav Hashem lachem." Stand and listen to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to command to you. So Rashi says, like I said before, that really this carbon, this parsha should have been given with Matan Torah, because it's a chelik of Torah. It is. It's a chelik of Torah. It's like one any other Tayrig mitzvahs. Karm Sheni is one. Pesach Sheni is one of the Tayrig mitzvahs. Why was it given this way? Megalgon Tzchus Hayidei Zakei. But what was happening here was that Moshe was really bringing down another chelik of Torah right now. It's called Pesach Sheni. It's a new parsha in the Torah. So I was thinking that maybe that's why Moshe Rabbeinu says Imdu Ve'eshma. Stand up and listen to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands. Because what does standing up mean? Standing up means that we're going to experience now a miniature Maimon Har Sinai. Maimon Har Sinai was done standing. Be'ema, be'yira, be'reses, be'zeach. Chazal say that we were shaking, we were in awe and reverence of Matan Torah. It was a very, it was a once in a, you know, once in a, I was going to say lifetime, but it's a, there's only one Matan Torah. That's it. But here, Moshe Rabbeinu had to tap in to that very yisayit of Matan Torah, because another parsha is being given here. So Imdu Ve'eshma, you have to stand up and get ready. Ready yourself, because right now we're going to re-experience, reenact Matan Torah in order to bring down this parsha. And that's exactly what happened. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu that here is the halachas and taka, there will be a Pesach Sheni, but it was all within the experience of a new Matan Torah. And perhaps that's why Moshe and Aaron were found in the Beis Medrash doing what? They were learning. When this parsha was presented, when this question was put to Moshe and Aaron, what did they do? They were found in the Beis Medrash. They were learning. You know what? It had to be that way. If they were just taking a walk in a park, this parsha could not have been given. Only when you have the right atmosphere of Kabbalah Satera, only when you have the right Ema, the Yira, the Reses, the Zeya, the fear, the trepidation, the trembling, the Maimed of Har Sinai, which was the learning of Moshe and Aaron, only then can you really expect to bring down a new law into this world in the atmosphere that's necessary to be brought down. They had to be learning. It had to happen that way. If it was any other way, they could not have tapped in to Maimon Har Sinai. And every single time we sit and learn, even though we don't realize it, every time we sit and learn, we are reenacting Matan Torah. There are so many beautiful chazalin and verloch about this, about how it says, first of all, a person learns with his grandson, Torah. It's like you're reliving Matan Torah. You're giving it over to your grandchild. That's an extension of Matan Torah. When a person, the Pachad Yitzchak speaks about it all the time, how a person, when he learns, he has to understand that it's kinesinasa, that Torah is being re-given again at this point. It's an amazing thing that we are zaycha every single day to opening up our Gemara and re-experiencing Matan Torah. And so it had to be in this ambiance of Imdu Ve'eshma, stand up, ready yourself, understand what's going on. And this is mechayev us a lot of different things. First of all, it means that we have to learn, when we're learning, it has to be in a certain frame of mind, in a certain posture, that we understand that what we're doing is holy and it's special, and we have to look that part, we have to act that part, we have to feel that part. It's not just another subject, Torah. Torah is life, and Torah is Kiddush, and Torah is Maimon Har Sinai. Right now, when we're speaking Torah right now, it's a Maimon of Har Sinai. It's a reenactment of Har Sinai. We're not standing, and we should be standing, but the Gemara darshans that, you know, Yar Dechol Shal Olam, but really, rightfully, when you learn, you're supposed to be standing, you're supposed to be shaking, you're supposed to be trembling. When you're in Shir, there are Chazal that say that you're supposed to, your lips are supposed to be trembling when you're in Shir. That's the way it is, that's the way the Torah was always given, Midar Ladar. I want to just end with an important yisaid on this topic about how we have to understand the kedusha of Torah. There's a pasuk in Nevi'im it's a pretty famous pasuk because there's songs that were made that were put to the word to these words. And it sounds like a beautiful pasuk, and I imagine that's why it was put. They use these words in songs. Hine yamim ba'am nom Hashem. Behold, days are coming, says Hashem. V'shlachti rav ba'aretz, and I'm going to send a famine in the world. What type of famine is coming? Loy rav la'lachem. It's not a famine for bread. You're going to have plenty of food in your refrigerator. V'loit sam alamayim, there's going to be plenty of water. It's not a famine of water. It's not a thirst. You're not going to be physically hungry or physically thirsty. Kiyim l'shmaya l'dvar Hashem. It's going to be a famine of hearing the Dvar Hashem, of hearing the word of Hashem. So it sounds like a good pasuk, right? But this is a very bad pasuk. In fact, there's a list. I think you'll find it at the beginning of Rus, in the Targum, if I'm not mistaken, where it speaks about Vayhi Rav Ba'aretz. So I think there were 10 great famines in history. One of the famines was this famine that the Navi speaks of. That it's going to be a Rav L'shmaya Dvar Hashem. It's a famine of, you're going to be famished to hear the Dvar Hashem, to hear the word of Hashem. So the Panovich Rav asks a great question. Why is that so bad? Why is that a famine? It's not a physical famine. We have food, we have water, we have drinks. So it's a famine to hear the Dvar Hashem. That means we're going to be thirsting and hungry to hear Hashem's word. That's a beautiful, that's a halavai. We should all be zeichet to that. We should all feel like we wake up in the morning, I'm hungry, I need, you know, like Rav Gifter used to say, that ich bin mit teira, zevi a shikr mit bronfin, which means that I am to teira like a drunkard is to his bottle of whiskey. I'm addicted. I'm always a drunkard. Never says, okay, I had enough. Thanks. I need another shot. You'll never see that. Go back to the bar again and again and again, and they have a constantly, right? That's because you're intoxicated. You're shikr. You're addicted. Somebody that's on drugs. And it's okay, I don't know if I already had my line for the day. I'm good to go. No one says that. You want more and more and more. So Rav Gifter says, that's how I am with Torah. I'm like a shikr. I'm obsessed. I'm addicted. I always need a safer. I always need more Torah. I'm always listening to, you know, whatever people. I want more. So that's a beautiful thing. What does it mean that you're going to be famished l'dvar Hashem? Why is that a bad thing? So the Panovich Rav says the following part. He says that, you know, sometimes we are, let's say we go into breakfast, and let's say the bagels weren't delivered fresh today. Okay, so we have a one-day-old bagel, and it's in the plastic, so it's not terribly hard. It's edible. But what would we do? You know, I'll just have cereal today. I don't want the bagel. What's wrong with the bagel? It's hard. It's a little. It's on its way out. You know. Or let's say the milk is. It's not totally spoiled. It's somewhat, but it's not. It's not perfect. We're not going to drink it, right? We don't want to get sick, and we don't want to. It's understandable. But that's only because we're living in times of plenty. We don't need it. We're not that famished that we need to have a bagel that's a day old or 2 days old, or we don't need to have milk that's a little bit on the way out. But Rachmana Litzlan, let's say people in the Holocaust. So do you think that if they had a 2 day old bagel, it would say, sorry, we're going to pass? Everything that they ate was probably a week old, 2 weeks old. They didn't have fresh food there. they were given coffee. I've heard people like report, like, you know, sounds oh great, they were given coffee, and coffee, it was like 9/10 was hot water, and there was a drop of coffee in there. Drop. Mom, it wasn't coffee. It was like hot water with like maybe a little tamsis of coffee. They were given spoiled potatoes. They were given spoiled vegetables. Everything was spoiled. They weren't given fresh food. But they weren't particular. Because you can't afford to be particular. You don't have the luxury of being a mafunek when you're in a concentration camp, Rahman al-Islam. When you're living in a time of famine, then people are not particular with what they're ingesting. You take whatever you can. You just want to live another day. So to live another day, I'll put spoiled milk in my stomach. I'll put a rotten potato in my stomach because it gives me the nutrition. It smells a little funny. You don't have that luxury, unfortunately. People that have that luxury, it means that they're living, you know, large. If they're living large, you could say, you know, spill out that milk. I think it's a little bit old. But if you're famished and you're hungry, so then you're not particular. Panamitsharov says that we'll be living in time, says the Navi, that we are so hungry for Torah that we're not going to be particular in the sources that we get Torah from. When we are on a level that things are good, then we're very particular. We're mafunakim about where Torah is from. Sometimes when you're so hungry for Torah, you take it from anywhere that you get it. And that's a horrible thing, says the Panamitsharov. That's one of the terrible famines of the world. That's a consequence of famine. And that's what we're going through in our day and age. People are hungry for Torah. People, Baruch Hashem, there's never been more Torah, possibly in human history, than there is now. People want to learn. They do. But because they want to learn so badly, they go and they're not particular in what they're ingesting. They're not particular as they should be in where they're getting their Torah from. And very often the source of the Torah are places that are very dangerous. And just in a very extreme example, I just saw on one of the news sources yesterday, I think it was 2 days ago. You know, they keep finding these people in Eretz Yisrael that have these shuls, and they look like regular Jews and rabbis and Hasidim or whatever. And really, they're missionaries. They're missionaries. They're basically scams. They have they're being funded by some, you know, missionary group. They completely dupe everybody into believing that they're Rabbanim and that they're and people go to them. And really, between the lines, they start, you know, telling them about Yashka and telling them about other religions and opening up their minds and, you know, into other things because we're living in times of Rav. People, they want. Why are they going there? Because they're hungry. They're thirsty. They want, but they're not particular, or they don't. Here, maybe they're being duped into not being particular. But what I'm really trying to speak about is that a lot of times people go and they get information. They get Torah. It's not really Torah, but they get information and hashkafa from sources that are not appropriate. That's why it's always important, like when you buy a sefer, to look at the haskamas. Because if it has haskama from a couple of good gedalim, rabbanim, whatever, so at least you can hopefully be saimachan. Not always. Sometimes they dupe the rabbanim into giving haskamas, and then afterwards they have to retract. But at least, by and large, you know, it's safe. It's, you know, if Art Scroll puts out something, hopefully it's approved and it's good. And if Feldheim puts out something, and if Israel Bookshop, you know, there are people that are, for the most part, reliable. But then there are books that are very unreliable. Not just that they're unreliable in the sense that, you know, that they're not written by people that are roy to put out svarim, but they are very toxic. because they're reading things and it gets into their brain, whether it's certain hashkafas about Gedalim in a negative light, certain hashkafas about Torah and about Kedusha and about Torah Misinai and about what we hold, the Yud Gimel Ikrim that we hold so precious, and it sort of undermines the Yud Gimel Ikrim, whether or not it's a physical book, whether or not it's a website, whether it's an email, whether it's a radio program. There are so many different methods that guys use, and they mean well. They want to be open minded. They want to get more and more chachma into them. But rabim chalolim hipila causes so many people to go off the derech. It doesn't mean that they're mechal Shabbos necessarily, but it plays with their brain enough that they have, it sows seeds of doubt, and it spawns a lot of problems for them. A lot of problems for them. When we learn Torah has to be learned with a Messiah from a Rebbe who had another Rebbe, had another Rebbe. If you can't get Torah from sources that are without a Messiah, because sometimes they're fine. It's on most of the thing I get, you print out a parsha sheet, if they're quoting other people or whatever, maybe they didn't get 100% right, but it can't be that bad. But sometimes if you don't know who the parasha sheet is from, and you just, a lot of times there's terrible hashkafas in these parashas. I used to, daven in a minyan, and they had somebody just printed out dozens and dozens of these parasha sheets, and he would it was like an in-house minyan, and he would just hand it out like cards, and a lot of it was just either like kfira, apikursis, people that had an axe to grind with gedalim, and it's a parasha sheet, so okay, it's, how bad could it be? But it's really bad. And if you read this stuff week after week after week, and you're not discerning, and you don't have a filter for what you should be looking at, and everything is fine, everything is Torah, everything is beautiful, it's a very dangerous thing. It's a slippery slope. And I could tell you personally, if you think that I'm just speaking at him, this is something that I have seen personally in yeshiva. Many, many guys that have really been badly affected by this. A lot of times people come to me and say, Rabbi, I don't really know if I believe or whatever. And I say, listen, I'll talk to you all you want about this. You have questions in Emunah, you have questions in Hashkaf, you have questions in Yerushamayim and in Torah Misinai. You have questions, it's fine. But just ask, I always ask them, did you imbibe in certain websites that I'm not going to talk about, Rabbin, but did you go to the... Yes, 9 times out of 10, maybe 10 out of 10 times, they were influenced and affected by certain either books or magazines or websites or newspapers or shows or tapes or CDs or whatever. And you have to be very, very, very careful in what you. It has to be Maimon Har Sinai. Torah has to be Kinesi Nasa. It has to be in a certain posture with a certain responsibility, and only from sources that are pure and with a Messiah. If it's from out of the box, they might be very good speakers, they might be very convincing and very, and it might even sound, they might use yeshivish sounding words and they seem like Mishalanu, but they're doing missionizing. They have an agenda. They want to be able to get people to question and to second guess our Messiah and our Yud Gimel Ikrim and our belief system. Why they have that agenda, it could be a million reasons, and they probably had a bad experience themselves with growing up in a rabbi that wasn't nice to them, or parents that, whatever it was, it doesn't matter. Maybe they felt that they that they were maskilim and they were able to figure out the truth on their own, but that's not our truth, and we don't believe in. We have to make sure to be like those people. They came and they. This isn't. This parsha itself is a very dangerous parsha. The parsha Pesach Sheni is a parsha that a lot of people use as a raya that you could be innovative with Torah. Right? These people they weren't happy, and they went to Moshe and they protested, they picketed Lamani Gara, and Mela, they got through the door. They were able to make progress. And a lot of people say, Pesach Sheni, B'nai Slavcha. These are people that were, obviously see that things are a little bit more elastic than we think they are. That's absolutely false. Rashi says that this is really a part of the Torah. Why wasn't it given to the Megalagon Sosai De Zakai? But don't believe that you know, because, you know, people want to paint certain things as a raya to their movements, to their agenda, to being progressive, to being open-minded, to being open, you know, that's all chazer treif. The guy might be a rabbi, might be called a rashiva, he might have a, it's, you have to be very, very careful, because there's a tzama l'dvar Hashem. We're living in times that Baruch Hashem people are eager, they want to learn. But where you get your information from is paramount. You have to be so discerning, and then some, that I will not look, I will not read, I'm not interested. Because once you start looking and reading and experiencing and exposing yourself to other things, it's a dangerous thing. That doesn't mean to say that Klal Yisrael, we don't have a response to them, you know, and that there's no and, there is answers. Just, you know, it's, but don't, why open up, you know, questions when you don't have to? Questions are not always good things. Sometimes questions are just going to make you crazy, because there aren't always so easy answers to everything that people ask. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't follow in our derech of emunah pshuta and believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, believe in Torah Misinai, and live and die for it. And so this is basically one little parasha in the Torah, Pesach Sheni. And I think we've learned three great lessons to go into the summer with. To be kaveh itim every single day, regardless of how difficult it is. To understand that it's important to spend time with gedolim, with tzaddikim, because it's only by him who it's in this world that we have that zchus. And if you're able this summer to go and visit big people and wherever it is, and so chaperein, do it. You're not going to get that opportunity forever. And finally, that when we learn Torah, it has to be maimed harsinaidik. It has to be with kinesinasa, with like the Torah was given, be'ema, be'yira, be'resas, be'zeya, imdu ve'eshma, stand up, accept the Torah with a certain reverence, embrace the Torah with a love, and make sure that whatever you're learning has to be with the Rebbe has to be responsible, the Rebbe has to be reliable, the svarim that we read, the books that we read, the websites that we visit, everything has to be made sure to be with the Messiah. Because with non-Messiah, it might look good, it might smell, but it's not good. It's very, very dangerous. So we're going into a summer, we have a lot of time, too much time in my opinion. You know, 2.5-3 months is way, way too much time for the biggest tzaddik in the world to survive without being in yeshiva. But, you know, people that are not the biggest tzaddikim, because we're human, we're Americans, we're Bachrim, we, you know, it's a dangerous time. I mean, the worst thing about our year is that we have such a big gap in the summer. It's too much. It's way too much. But that's the way it is. But that doesn't pater us from learning every day. It doesn't pater us from maintaining a kesher with our Rebbeim and to go around and try to visit Gedolim and Tzaddikim and gain from them. And finally, when we learn, and we have to learn a lot, but when we learn, it has to be with an Ema, with a Yira, with a Resus, with a Zeya, with a Yerushamayim, and when we're able to do that, and I'm looking around the room, and Yitaka all Tzadikim. If you're here on a Friday, a Memorial Day weekend, you know, and it's not surprising, this is the same Eilim that's pretty much here the whole year, and I very, very much appreciate it. It means more than you'll ever know. I know that it's the zeitgeist, the you know, the momentum is to leave Thursday night and to come back whenever. And the fact that you stay here, I'm sure a lot of you go home for Shabbos and you still stay. And I know that it's because, you know, you're fine, Bachram, you're fine, you know, and you should all be good benched for all that you do for Yeshiva, all that you do for me, all you do for Klal Yisrael. Shabba, Mitzvah Hashem will be around. We're not ending, but if this is the last shmooze, it might be a closer shmooze, but if this is the last shmooze, then you should all have an amazing summer. You should be zeichet to, because of your dedication to Torah that you all have, you should be zeichet to just shteig le'elo, le'elo, don't waste a day in the summer, chaperayin, and get fuller and fuller of Torah of Yerushalayim, so that when you come back in Elul, it's not like I got to get back to yeshiva. It's like I was in yeshiva the whole time. It's fine. It's not like a huge jump. And amidst Hashem, we look forward, you know, next year to continuing our relationship, continue giving over Torah, to continue to share Torah with one another. And amidst Hashem, you know, these are exciting days ahead for all of you. You know, this is the best time of your life. Big decisions to be made. major milestones in Mirtz Hashem, and Mirtz Hashem, we look forward to celebrating one Simcha after another together. Have a wonderful Shabbos.